the other fellow, I can't think of his name. Yeah, town administrator, have been here, come down. So I think we at least owe him that to consider this as an option. So it's kind of my rationale for the discussion. But alternatively, I have a question for the regional administrator. Is that possible?
Sure, I think it's appropriate at this time that we raise it, yes.
Okay. So my question is, alternative two, would that require mitigation on, do you, at right now, at this point, do you think it would require mitigation on the scallop pleat and the groundfish pleat?
Mr. Pinckney.
So thank you, Mr. Chairman. Right, so this idea of mitigation, or what I'd prefer to call compensation or an offset, has come up a number of times. And I just want to try to clarify what we are, what we mean by that concept or that term. It's not that something in and of itself is approvable or not approvable. It's really looking at the entire package of what is being proposed and what is being accomplished in terms of the goal here of the Habitat Amendment, which was to, you know, improve the quality, not necessarily the quantity, improve the quality of the habitat protections that were in place for essential fish habitat under the jurisdiction of this council. And I think that, you know, as we've been working on this action for the last year or so, first and foremost in our mind has been, you know, our intention to preserve the good work of this council to reach an agreement on the revisions to the habitat protections that are intended to optimize, as I said, habitat protections while allowing fishing activity to continue. And, you know, obviously by our approval or partial approval of Habitat Amendment 2, we feel that the council by and large did that. And this closure area, this Great Salt Channel Habitat Management Area, was a significant and keystone piece of that action. So any changes to now what we have under the Habitat Amendment must not compromise or undermine what we gained through that action. And so I, you know, that's been first and foremost in our mind. And so when we talk about mitigation for allowing some access, what we're really talking about is ensuring that the complete package of habitat protections afforded to our habitats in this region is maintained. And if you think back to, and this may be a sore subject because it was the disapproval part, but if you think back to the discussions and the many debates that we had in this, you know, in this council over how to move forward on closed area two and the northern edge in particular, there was a lot of discussions about George's Shoal areas, the various options that were put forward under George's Shoals as compensation for potential openings in George's, in closed area two on the northern edge. So that's really what we're talking about in the concept of mitigation. If there's going to be highly sensitive areas within this particular closed area that are going to be opened, then we need to be talking about areas that could be closed to offset and compensate for the lost habitat protections that we gained through through the Habitat Amendment. So I hope that clarifies for people and, you know, sort of helps solidify in people's minds what we're talking about when, if we use the term mitigation or offsets or compensation, that's really where we're looking at. Is that sufficient, Mr. Chairman, or?
Yes, I think that, Mr. Alexander, that's sufficient. That, Ms. Etri, I know that was a question. If you wanted to have a follow-up, I know that was your issue earlier in the day, or is that a sufficient answer? Attorney Etri.
I think that's a sufficient answer. I don't know potentially if it confuses it or it might be helpful. So just hypothetically speaking, if we were to put forward alternative two and the agency made a determination that, you know, there are no gains that were impacting the gains we made in OEG 2, then process-wise would be that you would disapprove this alternative, telling us why you disapproved it, and we would be in a situation where the entire area would be closed to the clam industry until the council decided to do something, if we decided to do something.
Mr. Pinckney.
Right, that's correct. We would not impose mitigation on, you know, as an offset. That's correct. If the council takes final action on this framework today, whatever it submits, if we determine that we cannot approve that action on its face, then we would disapprove that and inform the council of our reasons why, and provide hopefully the opportunity for the council to reconsider the action through a future action with either revisions to the proposed action, in other words, reducing the proposed actions to something that is approvable, or proposing offsets or compensation areas that would offset the impacts of the area that we disapproved.
Mr. Reed. Attorney Adrian.
So one quick follow-up, and it may be something that the agency can't answer, but just looking at this on its face, do you think alternative two is something that can be approved, or alternative two is not something that could be approved? And if I'm asking a question I shouldn't be asking, I'm sorry, but I'm going to ask it anyways.
Mr. Penn.
It's a reasonable question to which I will not be able to give probably a very satisfying answer. The challenge, of course, is that when we evaluate a council action, we evaluate the complete package and record. And we know that we don't have a complete analysis here today. Michelle has talked about the need to do more analyses on the sensitive and temporary nature of the potential impacts or likely impacts of any opening, reopening. And that work is what we would evaluate, you know, in total as part of our evaluation to approve or disapprove the framework. But having said that, I will highlight, as I did, I think, back in June, that there are some things with alternative two in particular that give us significant pause. Based on the information that we have available to us, and I really appreciate all the hard work that the PDT did and others that came forward with information and provided a lot of things to look at. You know, Rosencrown and Zone D in particular seem to be highly vulnerable and important habitats given the metrics that we're using. There's high stability, there's lots of dominance of cobble boulder habitats. And so all of those give us significant pause about the idea of this alternative on the table. So without being able to say definitively whether an alternative on its face is approvable or disapprovable, I think I've said what I can.
Mr. Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Right about now, I'd like to take Mayor Mitchell's advice and call time out, but we're out of time. So I've got great concerns about the approvability of alternative two, which, well, that's that. I also have great concerns about the eventual outcome and the possible alternatives for access to the HMA, and the real possibility that at the end of the day, the industry will get zero for access. That's a concern to me. You know, others have expressed concern about intended, unintended consequences, whatever you want to call them, and the word mitigation has been said many times. So with that being said, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to propose a substitute motion. Okay, I move to approve the following exemption areas for the clam fishery as specified below. McBlair and Zone AB to be open year round. Old South East Door to be open from May 1st to October 31st. And to include the mussel fishery in this exemption, not just B, but both A and B. Further, to task the PDT to develop with the industry a prioritized list of research needs in order to develop a fine-scale spatial survey of Rose and Crown and Zone D. The intent is to work towards an EFP program for these areas, which will support the potential development of additional exemptions in the future. If I get a second.
Looking for a second? Looking for a second on that? Second by Mr. Pentney. Rationale.
Well, I think I stated my rationale ahead of time. I mean, we've heard comments about Rose and Crown. We've heard comments about Zone D and the information that we have. I know this isn't perfect. I know it's not. But in my opinion, it is approvable. And it will, if it is approved, it will grant the industry access, such as it is, to the area. It also puts in a research component that, you know, we talked about research component being financed by the industry. That is not part of this motion. It is a something that needs to be developed in order to get better analysis of Rose and Crown and Zone D in the future. So, I mean, it's a hell of a carrot to stick in front of the industry. I know that. But it has potential. The other part of this motion that is a little bit different than alternative two is it opens those areas. They're open. There's no five-year sunset. Those areas are open. And then the other ones are to be developed. So, I mean, I know it's not perfect, but in my opinion, its approvability is much better than option two, and it gets the industry access to an area that they need. So,
I'm going to call on the seconder of the motion for additional comment before we start the public comment. Mr. Pinckney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to note for the record that, you know, looking at this and discussing with Lou, who's my division chief for the Habitat Division, and obviously spent a lot more time thinking about this and looking at these issues than I've been able to do, that this is a significant step forward towards what I think has been our goal all along of finding a compromise that provides some access for the clam fishery to continue operating, but maximizes the potential habitat protections afforded by this area. I also note that, you know, the last paragraph there, to me, what that's indicating is that the door is not closed on Rose and Crown and Zone D, which I realize are probably the two most important sub-areas within this area. The door is not closed, but it provides a path forward for this council to reconsider access within those areas. Should we be able to identify some alleyways or sub-portions of those areas where the mix of habitat protection and clam fishing can continue in a more defined and discreet way. And I hope that, you know, as we get more information about the area, finer scale survey information and maybe some sentinel fishing in those areas, once we have some survey information, we'll be able to come back to the council with a proposal to provide some more access, particularly after we have some experience, if this motion were to move forward and if we were able to approve it with the idea of the 5-minute pings on the VMS, where we can get some enforcement experience in terms of being able to discriminate fishing activity within smaller areas. So I seconded the motion for discussion and hope that the council can have a discussion about this as an option and possibly move it forward. As I said, I think this is a good step forward in terms of the overall goal of the action. But I just want people to understand that, as I said earlier, we have to make an approval decision on the complete package, including all of the analysis, some of which has not yet been done. And so while I support this motion and the idea of moving forward with this at this time, please don't interpret that to be the definitive statement that this will be approved. We still have to do our due diligence, work with the council staff, review the information, and make an informed approval decision on behalf of the secretary at the end of that process. Thank you.
Thank you. Before we start the comment, Vice Chairman Stockwell had a clarifying question to the maker of the motion.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the motion, Eric. Question I have concerns a comment that Mike just made about the 5-minute pings. Unlike the other alternatives, you did not include monitoring requirements. Is that inclusive, or is that going to be in a separate motion?
Yeah, sorry about that, Terry. No, obviously monitoring, everything that came out of enforcement and committee is already in the framework as far as all the monitoring, the pings, the gear stowage, all that other stuff. It's not on there, but it is certainly intended and implied.
So would you be feeling friendly to just to add monitoring requirements into this?
Sure, that's fine.
Maybe Michelle can do a little wordsmithing. So that language reflects Mr. Pentney, the seconder. That's okay. Very good. All right, we've got the friendly language. So here's how we're gonna proceed, and please listen carefully, because this little complicated Robert's Rules of Order. Since this is a motion to substitute, we're gonna debate the motion to substitute. So when somebody gets up to comment, it's, I support Mr. Reed's motion to substitute, and this is why, or I'm opposed to it, and this is why I support Mr. Alexander's motion. So we're trying to have the debate. So please don't say I'm for two, but we're trying to frame the discussion as up, yes or no, on the motion to substitute. Once we perfect both of those motions, somebody may want to offer an amendment to the substitute. Somebody might want to offer an amendment eventually to the main motion. We will then have two votes. Vote number one will be the motion to substitute. Do we want Mr. Reed's motion to substitute Mr. Alexander's motion? That'll be yes or no. We'll tally that up. And if that wins, then that'll wipe Mr. Alexander's off of the board, and Mr. Reed's motion will become the main motion. Then we will vote on that again. In the alternative, if you don't like Mr. Reed's motion and we vote no, that gets wiped off the board, and we go back to the main motion, Mr. Alexander's pending main motion. So I'm going to now go out to the audience for comment on the motion to
substitute. Point of order, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Pierce.
Okay, the maker of the motion is chairman of the Enforcement Committee, and that motion that the Enforcement Committee made relative to the boundaries has not been offered up yet. So it's a clarification, the specific elements of this motion conflict, I believe, with the Enforcement Committee's recommendation for boundaries, for example, the East Aurora, the Old South. Zone B is included as opposed to, so I need a clarification as to how does that Enforcement Committee motion get dealt with in light of this motion.
Ms. Bachman.
So the committee, the Habitat Committee, discussed the recommendations of the Enforcement Committee and basically adopted the Enforcement Committee's recommendations for adjusting the management areas. And so what's in the draft alternatives in the framework document reflects all of the enforcement recommendations. So I don't know that we were planning on separately bringing those enforcement recommendations to the council, more just that they're embedded in the range of alternatives that currently stands. So I would just view this as kind of a adjustment of the area, you know, the areas that are already in alternatives 2, 3, and 4 in the document, and just applying a sort of slightly different set of measures.
Dr. Pierce.
So if this passes, if the substitute passes and then is adopted as the main motion, does that mean that we'll have to entertain the motion from the Enforcement Committee later on relative to the new boundaries for the areas that are now posed in this motion to substitute?
Spockman.
I wouldn't say so. I think my understanding would be that the the areas, what's referenced here in Mr. Reed's motion reflects the areas as adjusted by the enforcement committee. Those coordinates and those adjusted areas are already in the draft framework.
Okay, so with the ground rules I laid out, I'm going to go out to the audience for comments on the motion to substitute. Yes, sir, in the front, please come forward and state your name.
Hi, Eric Powell. I'm at University of Southern Mississippi, and I'm just a poor, hardworking scientist that works mostly on surf clams and ocean quahogs. And I would just like to support the alternative with one exception, and that is I think that the PDT should be asked to put together the research program. I think that's my understanding, at least, what their reason for being is, and to for the council to specify a specific research direction, which is a fine scale survey, I think removes from the PDT the kind of deliberation that you would really like to see. I would choose to change fine scale survey to something like improved information database so that they have a little more flexibility. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anybody else on the motion substitute? Attorney Fula.
That's hot. Thank you, David Frula, for the 17 handshuck clam vessels that are predominantly affected by this this action. I want to address the premise of this motion and the premise of the mitigation advice, because I don't know that I see that from the problem statement that the council had voted out. The council intends through this action to identify areas within the HMA that are currently fished or contain high energy sand and gravel that could be suitable for a hydraulic clam dredging exemption that balances achieving optimum yield for the fishery with a requirement to minimize adverse fishing effects on habitat to the extent practicable. We've talked here about a trailing action. The council, and I would submit NIMS, when it approved the habitat amendment, had anticipated some level of impact from this clam dredge amendment that we're not hearing about today. Because what's being said essentially is if anything is more than minimal, it'll require mitigation. But respectfully, it appears that what the council set out to do was to recognize that there would be a follow-on amendment and that it would have some level of impacts, and that those impacts would be measured against a practicability standard. And if you look at the practicability standard under the Essential Fish Habitat Amendment, that provides considerable discretion to the council, considerable discretion to look at economic impacts, more so than under National Standard 8, certainly more so than under National Standard 1. And it appears that the council's hands are being tied in a way that doesn't look consistent with where we started. And again, I don't think anybody's going to say we want to bet it all on black 36 and gamble, but at the same time, making sure that we're faithful to the problem statement and faithful to the law is important. What I'm concerned about here as I look at it is what we're basically saying is we're going to burn the village and then go back and see if we can figure out how to save it. And that doesn't seem to me to be where we ought to be looking. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Attorney Frula. Yes, sir, in the back.
Hello, I'm Sam Martin from Atlantic Cape Fisheries, large seafood company. We employ over 500 people in the seafood industry. More than 150 of those persons are directly affected in the fact with the fact that we cannot support this motion. Anything less than what we can have in the Rose and Crown, which is 70% of the production, is something that we can't take. And that's a small area, but 70% of the production is there. We're going to be creating the loss of jobs in these areas. We operate clam vessels out of New Bedford and Fairhaven. We have a processing plant in Bristol, Rhode Island. And overall, like that was said before, over 500 persons in the industry are going to be added to the poverty rate that we already have of 23% because we will not be able to make it on this box that we see sitting here right now. It's an absolute economic decision that we cannot have. You know, our company alone stands to lose $20 million in gross revenue over this. $20 million. And that doesn't count the further vendor stream. Collectively, as a whole, the industry produces about 450,000 bushels, 70% of it in the Rose and Crown area. And if you translate all those bushels, because in short order, we will be out of the entire area because we'll have fished out those small little boxes that we see, we're going to lose an economic downstream of $60 million worth of jobs affecting families and affecting communities. And there is no other viable place to go. We cannot lose the Rose and Crown area. There's no other options. So you have to ask yourself, what are you protecting? And with the knowledge and the scientific evidence that proves that we are not adversely affecting complex habitat from the experience that we have in the fishery, are we willing for a fact, an absolute fact, to devastate a large segment of the clam industry, losing yet another fishing community in New England? There's got to be another way around this, or to look patiently at some other ideas in the future without putting us out of business. We're currently working with surveys, we're gathering information, and we're working on the problem. Industry has been a partner in this the entire time, and stopping current scientific work that's ongoing with the willingness to eliminate jobs just because we can is really not something that we should be doing. The science shows that we need this in the future. We will need this area because of the migration of clams to the north and east. And if we close this area, we will not have an opportunity to open it anytime soon. We need to further survey the area while we continue to work in it because the evidence that we have is that we are not affecting complex habitat in any way. So please consider any way possible to leave this 18% of the overall HMA open. That means 82% of it's closed. Where can we look to in the future to get that 18% back without affecting another fishery? There's got to be a way with all the wind energy that's coming up and all the areas that we're not going to be able to fish. There's a massive amount of land that's going to be taken away, and this is one area that they're not necessarily looking at for wind energy, but yet there are a lot of other areas that the clam industry is in that they are looking at. So can't we take a patient approach to this, because this is a hugely devastating for our business. We're talking 25% or more of our employees, because we will be out of business if we have to be in these small boxes within a year. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Anybody else? Yes.
Hi, Allison Lawrence with Conservation Law Foundation. We oppose this motion and support no action for the framework. The council took over 10 years to complete the Omnibus Habitat Amendment, and in this sub-region removed two areas to protect the Great South Channel HMA for its habitat benefit, and allowing one of the most destructive fishing gears into this area would render that action meaningless and create an HMA in name only. It's also inconsistent with the purpose and need of the framework, and clam dredging has effects that are neither minimal nor temporary. As Mr. Pentney mentioned, we need to ensure that there's a full suite of protections in this area, and I'd like to read from the August 13, 2018 PDT memo Dr. Ford noted that we identified specific HMAs that were determined to provide adequate protection at the scale of the region. Reducing protection within existing designation fails on a logical argument. It has been decided that this HMA is the size needed to protect adequate protection at the scale of the region. Furthermore, this area is EFH for 8 managed council species, including overfished cod, yellowtail flounder, windowpane, and winter flounder. And the East Door Old South area has been identified as a cod spawning area, and on that fact alone should be removed from any consideration to allow destructive gears within that area. And it's been noted that seasonal closures have limited benefit on habitat recovery, given that there would only be 6 months to recover from any effects. Overall, this framework sets a dangerous precedent, and if the motion is ultimately approved, the council must find other areas to protect as compensation measures. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Lawrence. Anybody else in the audience to the substitute motion? Seeing none, back to the council. Seeing Dr. Pierce.
I can understand why the substitute motion is attractive. I think Mike made some very compelling arguments as to why he doesn't feel that the original motion is supportable. However, I do support the main motion, alternative number 2, for a number of reasons. I'm very comfortable with the monitoring process that has been identified, tied to research that could be done at the same time as the fishing is occurring. And this would be research that the Division of Marine Fisheries and SMAST would develop. I noted this, by the way, in November 2nd correspondence to the chairman of the council. So heavy emphasis on research, heavy emphasis on preserving economic opportunity, and at the same time, trusting the industry to do what they have said they already do, which is to fish where the surf clams are and not to go into hard bottom where they will just damage their gear. We work with the surf clam industry, I certainly have, for quite a long time, and as a consequence of that, I feel that the motion to substitute is going to have some very significant immediate negative impact on the fishery itself, shoreside processes and all of that. I'll also highlight the fact that one reason why I support the main motion and not the substitute is that I have concerns that with a shutdown of much of the area that would occur with the substitute motion, there'll be even more interest by the surf clam fishery in state waters, and which is where I do not want to have an effort shift. I would rather have it offshore where the surf clam abundance is high, sustaining the industry, notably out of New Bedford and, of course, out of Rhode Island as well. So, with all that said, I recognize the regional administrator's concerns, his issues, but I also have my concerns and issues, so I'll oppose the substitute and support the main motion.
Thank you very much, Dr. Pierce. Anybody else? Mr. Kendall, then Mr. Hughes, then Mr. Oshevsky.
Yes, I agree with David on this one. I really can't support the substitute motion. I can support the underlying motion as well. When you look at $6 million, revenue and to the local economy, and we're talking about a 27% area that could be fished with 73% closed, I still think that's an adequate amount of, bottom for the habitat that could be worked on. So, for that matter and all the matters that Dr. Pierce said, the local economy here in New Bedford and all the families it could affect with the shoreside infrastructure, I could support the underlying motion.
Mr. Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question of Dr. Jim Weinberg. And Jim, I'm sorry to catch you off guard at this, but I've asked you this question in the past. Does the Bigelow have the ability to go into the Nantucket Shoal HMA and perform a survey?
Yeah, I think you asked me that at a previous meeting, and I checked back, and I was told that we weren't surveying that area and hadn't been doing it with the Bigelow due to its depth limitations. And I always like to be careful and say that I'd like to check that, but that's my recollection.
That's my recollection also. I appreciate that. So the Science Center has no ability to survey the Nantucket Shoals HMA, which we're discussing today. And we talked about a carrot and a stick earlier. Well, you know what? It's a big carrot. It's a hard stick to freaking swallow when pretty much that's being put on industry's shoulders, because industry is the only ones that has the ability and the technical ability to go in there with clam vessels and perform a survey. Because the Science Center doesn't have the ability to do that. I would also like to mention something that was brought to the attention of one of our commenters today, wind energy sites. There are a number of wind energy sites that have been identified up and down the coast from Massachusetts through North Carolina. And the wind energy site that is currently the AWIAs that are currently identified off of New England, comprised of 907,728 acres. That's equivalent to 1,418 miles of wind energy sites. And as they're being built out, and when they're built out, they're going to have effects on every fishery in the Mid-Atlantic and New England. Every fishery. Those sites are going to create habitat. They're also going to kill a lot of clams and kill a lot of scallops when they're being built out. But these are a fact of life, and these wind energy areas and these developers are coming. And that's going to be a part of policy in the United States. It already is. And there's got to be some consideration. When you talk mitigation, we're talking 1,418 miles, and those are just the identified areas up in New England that are going to be leased, and the last three areas are going to be leased on December 13th. I'm in favor of wind energy. I'm not opposing it. What I am opposing is that we don't have the ability to sit here right now and understand what is mitigation for access to, what, I forget the number, 27% of this HMA, which encompasses about 200 square miles. And the wind energy site that's been identified right here in this region is over 1,400 miles. I support the underlying motion, the Alexander motion. Thank you.
Mr. Olszewski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to have to oppose the motion to substitute. I feel like we worked on this for quite some time, and the components of research and monitoring, sunset provision, enforcement input are all very valid management compromises. And I feel like this is what we asked for, this is what we received from the industry, and I feel like the closure of the main area would have economic impacts that would to the region that would be measurable. So I will be opposing this motion to substitute. Thank you.
Mr. Stockwell, then Dr. McKenzie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to speak in support of the motion to substitute. Primarily, I view it as an equity issue. While this framework is being developed, we can observe surf clam effort increasing in the area. The council's being asked to freeze the current footprint while potentially impacting two fisheries that have been excluded from the area. We don't know what that might be, but I'm concerned about the ability of this council to address access to the northern edge. I'm concerned about what this council might be asked to do to allow for mixed trawl fisheries and other scallop fishing. This is a share the resource issue. The research component in here that the maker of the motion to substitute incorporated that will allow us the ability to determine if and how to allow access into the rest area. I think it's a prudent and smooth way forward, and I hope the motion to amend substitute prevails.
Attorney Eitri.
I'm going to support the motion to amend Mr. Reed's motion. I can appreciate the economic arguments that are being raised in support of the underlying motion for alternative two, but I've struggled throughout this action because it's been very clear from the beginning that if we were not careful, we were setting up a situation where whatever we propose would be disapproved and the agency would come back to us and say, if you want us to open up this area, something's going to got to give, and it's probably going to be on the backs of the groundfish fishery and the scallop fishery, two industries that had actively engaged throughout the long, tenuous process of OHA2. I struggle with alternative two as written because it includes things such as an exemption for mussel dredges when we clearly state in OHA2 that mussels are considered habitat. I feel like this is a balance. I feel like it addresses the equity concerns that we're treating all the fisheries the same. I feel as if this is going to provide some opportunity to do additional research and to potentially look at Rose and Crown in the future and Zone D in the future. I can get behind the motion 2A. I can't get behind alternative 2. And it's not because I don't feel the brunt or see the brunt that this will have on the industry. I understand the economic impacts, but I'm also looking at this thinking that alternative two as written is most likely going to be approved. And if you want to feel the brunt will be when we're in this situation this time next year where everyone's asking us to do something because the entire area is closed. So I'm going to support the motion to substitute because I feel like right now that this is the best way forward and it provides some access, but it's not treating one fishery above other fisheries, and it's also consistent or more consistent with the goals and objectives of OHA 2.
Dr. McKenzie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've been opposed to this framework since we initiated it years ago. It came at the 11th hour of a 14-year process that roped in every other industry that was affected, and they sacrificed time and treasure and talent and coming to meetings ad nauseum. And I think, you know, I share Libby and Terry's concerns about equity. So I just wanted to add my voice to that support. It's a rare day that I support something from Eric Reed, and I'm going to support this today.
And vote with Libby, too.
And Libby as well. It was a rare day. I am not happy with Motion 2A, but it's the best, I think, compromise we can have between minimizing the adverse effect of this fishery as laid out in the framework and allowing access. I think the way the framework is written and the way the habitat amendment itself is written, I have questions about whether we should allow any access at all. But that said, there is a question of fairness. And this seems to be a way to move forward. We protect the habitat we need to protect that's been identified through series of scientific analyses that have been documented in numerous council documents, that this is valuable habitat, the habitat that we set aside to protect. We are avoiding it with Eric's motion, avoids the adverse effects of that. I'd like to see a sunset provision on the research portion of it. I'm not sure I'm gonna get that, but I'll support 2A. I will not support the underlying motion.
Anybody else from the council before Mr. Arstead?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this is a difficult vote for a lot of people. I've sat here and listened to the different perspectives offered, and I can try to put myself in somebody else's head and understand where they're coming from. I obviously can't do that in all cases, but on balance, I do support the motion to amend. It's not perfect, nothing is. As others have pointed out, this has been kicked around for a long time, and it's also been stated that a decision needs to be made, and needs to be made today. Points made by Mr. Pentney certainly weigh heavily on where I think we are headed with this, and I think the compromise is the right way to go. So that's what I wanted to add. Thank you.
Great, so before I call the vote, I just want to allow any councilman, we need to perfect both the motion to substitute and the main motion. So does anybody want to offer an amendment either to the motion to substitute or to the main motion? Dr. McKenzie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In light of my comment, I would like to make a motion to amend motion 2A to include a five-year sunset provision on the research components. And it, namely, in particular, I see the, or am I missing something?
Excuse Mr. Pitney. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe you could, sorry, we're in the middle of this, but I was just, my initial reaction was, why would we put a sunset on research given that we always entertain, requests for letters of authorization under research or exempted fishing permits if warranted and justified. And I understand alternative two, it put a 5-year sunset on the opening with a research expectation as part of that. But my understanding of the motion to substitute, the two areas of concern, Rosencrown and Zone D, are closed unless and until sufficient research information comes to us to warrant reconsideration of that closure to reopen them. So putting a 5-year constraint on that, I'm not sure is necessary, if I may.
Thank you, Mr. Pendy, for that. My thinking was that it would help us mobilize that research so we can get a firmer understanding of this sooner. But in light of your concerns, I'll withdraw the motion.
Any additional proposed motions to amend? Dr. Sisselwine.
Yeah, I would also make a motion to amend, I think, a minor one, but I am sensitive to the comment that Eric Powell made about not prescribing what research is needed. So I would ask to amend, and I'm sort of doing this on the fly, it now reads research needs in order to, I would just say research needs concerning Rose and Crown in Zone D. Now, the intent there is just simply not to specify in advance what the research is. Everything, the sense of it would continue exactly as written. So I would ask for that amendment or propose that as an amendment if somebody wants to second it.
Let me just see if it's too late in the game to do a friendly amendment. Would that?
Well, Dr. Chairman and Dr. Mike, I would have inserted the word including, but concerning certainly does it for me, so I have no problem with that.
I'm happy if it's friendly, if the process...
Any objections to that language change? Seeing none, we'll consider a friendly amendment, make that change. Any other proposed amendments, either to the motion to substitute or the main motion? Seeing none, so we're going to call a vote. Vote yes on. We're going to call a vote on the motion to substitute. If it's a yes vote, you're supporting that and wiping out the main motion by Mr. Alexander. So all in favor of the motion to substitute, signify by raising your hand. All opposed. Any abstentions? Seeing none, the motion to substitute passes 12-4 with no abstentions. So now that's wipes out the Alexander motion, and that becomes the main motion. In light of what's at stake here, I'm going to go back to the audience for any additional comments now on the pending main motion. Normally we consider the first round of discussion, but I think it's important that everybody gets a final shot at this if they wish to. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Guy Simmons of Sea Watch International, also chairman of the Industry Advisory Board for the Science Center for Marine Fisheries. And I wanted to take off from what Dr. Pierce said, and also being inspired by Chris Oliver's statements, that rest assured that the industry, and not just the small boat industry on Nantucket Shoals, is committed to working with the agency, with the Northeast Science Center, to do the research to back this motion. So I just wanted you to know that not just the small boat fishery, but the entire clam, surf clam and ocean quahog fishery is behind the research going forward. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Anybody else from the audience on the now pending main motion? Seeing none, back to the council. Seeing none, we'll call a vote on the main motion, which is Mr. Reed's substitute motion. All in favor, signify by raising their hand. All opposed? Any abstention? Motion passes 16-0 with no abstentions. I'm going to go back to Chairman Grout now. So that concludes selecting the, that concludes that portion. We're going to go some additional habitat issue. Mr. Reed.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Chairman. So I have a question about process and timing. The clock runs out on April 1st or April 9th, I think it is. Do we feel we are going to make that deadline, or do we need to have an extension for the current exemption while everybody does their following actions from what just happened?
Great question. I'm going to ask Mr. Pentney. I think we're not going to be completed by April the 9th, so that may be something we want to talk about. Mr. Pentney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I think we heard Michelle's presentation, you know, that there's a lot of work to put together a package of this nature, and particularly recognizing that the way the document is currently structured has to be modified slightly to reflect the decision of the council. It is going to be very difficult, I think, for staff to submit and have a document by April. We will certainly work with council staff as expeditiously as possible to make progress, but as she said, I don't expect that we're going to be able to complete our rulemaking by April 9th. It's already December. You know, we typically say 6 to 8 months to get an action in place. Unfortunately, because of the structure of the regulations in place that the council adopted in the original habitat amendment, the sunset happens automatically. We need a regulatory action to create the opportunity for fishing on April 10th. So whether the regulatory action is, you know, the framework or something else, it would require work on our part to get that done. So I'm not really sure how else we get that done other than to put as much effort as possible into getting the framework submitted and implemented as quickly as possible.
Mr. Reed.
Okay, so the quickest way to do it is a framework acceptable, but then the question becomes, if a framework is acceptable, how long is it going to take to get that done? I mean, if we initiate a framework, if I know Tom's looking at me like I got five heads, so anyway, if we initiate a framework to develop an extension, how long would that? You can do it in two meetings. I mean, I don't want to lose this. Yeah, help me out,
Mr. Nice.
Somebody help me out to understand what I'm trying to get done here.
The answer to your question is we would have to have two meetings of the council, and I worded that on purpose because it doesn't mean two council meetings. We could have a committee meeting and a council meeting, assuming we get one initiated at this meeting, I think. So you could conceivably vote at the January council meeting, perhaps. The problem is, of course, that means that somebody has to prepare and submit and document the framework document, which means they won't be working on the surf clam framework. Once that document was approved, the agency would have to submit it. We'd have to submit it. They'd have to approve it, go through the proposed rule and everything else. I don't think that would be done by April 1st. And I don't know when it would be done. It's kind of a balancing act here. I'm not sure
which is better, to have Michelle and the agency try and get the surf clam framework done as quickly as possible, or stop them working on the surf clam framework to do another action to extend it. You know, my guess is that that action would probably get implemented roughly the same time as the surf clam framework. We have to sketch it out, I suppose, to see if that's a correct assumption. But this is something we knew was coming, is what I'm saying. And I don't think we can fix it at this late a time frame and have very much difference in when the surf clammers get their changed access.
Attorney McDonald. Different item. Well, why don't we do this while we're thinking about it? We need one more motion to submit this to the agency, the final action. I know, Michelle, if there's language there that we need a final vote. Mr. Grubb.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to make a motion to complete this action and submit the document to GARFO.
Seconded by Mr. Balzano. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, signify by raising your hand. All opposed, all abstaining. Motion passes 15-0 with one abstention. So why don't we do this? There's a couple of other habitat-related issues that we got to discuss while we try and figure out a strategy. I'm going to turn it back over to Mr. Grout because we got a couple of offshore wind energy issues we need to discuss. Mr. Grout.
Yeah, there's a couple of there's a Vineyard Wind DIS that is going to be released here soon, and we may potentially want to consider whether we want to provide comments to it. And there's also was a notice recently about seismic testing and for offshore oil exploration that we may want to consider. So Michelle's going to go over those to determine whether we want to have any kind of action on this.
Thanks. So there's basically, I think, three different things I wanted to just bring to everyone's attention. So the first thing, as Doug mentioned, and it's actually available today. I could send out a link to the draft EIS for the Vineyard Wind project. So that the official publication of the notice of availability is going to be Friday, I believe, and then there will be a 45-day comment period on that, which will close on January 21st. Earlier in 2018, I think at our January meeting and the Mid-Atlantic Council's February meeting, we talked about sort of strategy for engagement on offshore wind, and I think a point that was raised in front of both councils was the idea that we would try and comment on these draft EISs as being sort of an important thing that we could do. But obviously, you know, because the comment period closes on the 21st of January prior to our next meeting, we would, you know, want to develop and submit those comments without, you know, the benefit of the council as a whole reviewing them. So I think it would be helpful to kind of, you know, get a sense of the council if you would, that's something you would like us to, you know, staff to devote some time to. Obviously, other commitments in terms of submitting the framework, and I'm still wrapping up the Coral Amendment and some other actions that, you know, we're working on and getting submitted that will happen later this week. But I think even just some general comments could be quite important. Obviously, we'll continue to work with the NIMFS wind team. They will also be developing and submitting comments related to impacts to EFH, but also impacts to fisheries. So this isn't something, you know, a lift we need to do on our own. Our letter could be sort of briefer. And I was talking with Sue Tuxbury over in Habitat Conservation Division today. There's the DEIS comment period window, and then they will have a little bit more time to work back and forth with BOEM on
EFH consultation. So there's some additional opportunity a little bit later in the winter and early spring to work on some recommendations around protecting EFH relative to the project. So, you know, there's a little bit of flexibility in providing some of those recommendations, but we are on a short deadline to make comments on the draft EIS. The EIS itself is actually a short document, but there's a lot of appendices that heavily references the construction operations plan, which is more lengthy. So it'll certainly be a lift to review it, but I think it's probably something that's important to do.